I'm Rebecca Lavoie, and this is You Can't Make This Up. You Can't Make This Up is the podcast where we uncover the true stories behind your favorite Netflix documentaries and films. On today's episode, we take a closer look at the Netflix documentary series, Unlocked, a Jail Experiment.
So what I'm looking at doing, open up all the doors. You'll have the ability to come in and out of your cell, but having a deputy step out as well and let y'all be a community.
Today, we're talking to executive producer Greg Henry and Sheriff Eric Higgins. In an effort to reduce problems with discipline and recidivism, the sheriff in Pulaski County, Arkansas, rolled out a radical plan for the county jail. Instead of the standard 23-hour lockdown, he'd open the doors in one pod for 6 weeks and let the detainees run things without the presence of guards. The goal? Empower them to become self-sufficient and learn the skills needed to succeed on the outside. But the experiment isn't without risks for both the inmates and the sheriff. The Netflix series Unlocked, a Jail Experiment, takes us behind bars and into a makeshift community of longtime prisoners and a new generation of inmates as they try to navigate their new responsibilities. Can they work together to improve behavior in the unit and preserve their newfound privileges? Or will the old ways of jailhouse culture return and force the sheriff to shut the experiment down?
I think there's consequences and repercussions for these actions that you take, you know what I mean? The trash will take itself out. All you gotta do is sit back and watch it, you know what I mean? But it's still gonna ruin it for a lot of people, you know what I'm saying?
And I'm joined now by executive producer Greg Henry and Pulaski County Sheriff Eric Higgins. Welcome to You Can't Make This Up.
Thank you so much for having us today.
Sheriff, true story, please. Where did this idea come from to change up the protocols in H Unit and see what happens?
You know, when we look at the jail setting, one of the challenges you have in a jail is getting people to even come to work in a jail setting. The employees that want to work in there. And then you're dealing with safety and responsibility in the jail. And we recognize that the detainees have a role in the safety and how the jail functions. And so we are looking at, can we do things differently? Can we empower them? We had implemented things in the past before the pandemic. One of the things was a tier system where based on their behavior, there were some benefits in the unit. And so detainees are able to move to an upper tier system based on their behavior, compliance, and just the peace in the unit. So that's kind of the backdrop of it, is the improving the safety by rewarding behavior, expecting detainees to step up in their behavior. I think they'll meet the expectations that we have for them. And then looking at how we create an even safer environment for our employees so that they will be comfortable and want to work in a detention center.
Can you talk about how this worked logistically? Because this was an isolated space inside the facility, right? This was you created like a new pod, right?
So we had the pod, the unit. We've got 18 units in the facility, and we designated one of the units to create this environment, and so it was emptied out, and we began moving people into the unit.
Now, this is something that I've seen before, like in European, Scandinavian facilities that are a little bit more like dormitories than typical lockup. And you are the sheriff, and it's clear that you're familiar with this kind of model. You have this very forward way of thinking. But I did see a little bit of side eye, so to speak, during that initial staff meeting. And I'm curious, would you say that everyone in the jail bought into the program when you first proposed it or not?
The short answer is no. they did not buy into the idea.
So with the deputy not being in the unit, what are the big issues we're going to have to look at?
There will be several pod bosses. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to develop that type of community, somebody is going to take control. Mm. Somebody is going to be stronger. And that somebody is going to use whatever tactics they feel like they need to take.
Because it's something different over here. You know, sometimes I think here in the United States, we feel like we have to force people into compliance and carry the big stick and getting them to do what we need them to do. And I think we have to look at it differently. So even in this facility, there's resistance to that because of the way we've always done things. And so when you're looking at doing something different, you have that resistance. And when you're looking at doors being unlocked and detainees having a little bit more freedom, people frown on that. You know, and the reality of it, you're still in jail. You're still in a unit, and there's still security concerns that we have to make sure that we are in compliance with. But just the idea of giving someone more freedom, that's a natural resistance from people. And we did have some employees and some staff members that agree with it. But, you know, it's always a challenge to try to go in this direction. And then it's one thing to do things without everyone watching. Mm. It's another thing to do things where our actions or our mistakes may be exposed.
I'm not sure that everybody understands the difference between a jail and a prison. The stakes are a little bit different in a jail setting. Can you just talk about the differences between a jail and a prison and, you know, why this experiment is maybe a little bit different in a jail than it would be in a prison?
You know, first of all, in the prison setting, people are convicted. Once you're convicted of a crime, you go to prison. In a jail setting, when law enforcement has probable cause to make an arrest and someone's arrested, they are placed in a jail and waiting to go to trial. So over 80% of the people in our jail are waiting to go to trial. So they're innocent until proven guilty. They haven't gone to trial and been convicted of a crime. And then in the jail setting here in Placer County Jail, if someone is sentenced, I can only hold them if they're sentenced up to a year. Anything over a year, they'll go to a state prison. And so there's one of the differences between the two settings. And in a jail setting, people get bonded out. And, you know, you're going to be released. So then again, approximately 75-80% of the people who are booked into a county jail are released to the community. So the majority of them are going back to the community. As opposed to when you go to prison, you have a set sentence. You may parole out. You may be sentenced to 20 years and parole out in 10. But you're going to be there for a set period of time.
Hmm. So, Greg, how did you get involved in documenting this project?
So I spend most of my time in jails and prisons across the country because we do a lot of programming in those settings. And we had the idea of trying to figure out, you know, how to bring to a viewer a piece that they would want to watch, but also would raise this conversation about the way that we incarcerate and detain people in America. And so we were out really looking at every county that we could around the country to just try to see where are places that people are doing things differently. Sheriff Higgins is very modest. Getting into his facility, he's got programs and ideas that are kind of like pushing what it is that we want to be doing to our detainees. Because as Sheriff Higgins pointed out, they are people who are awaiting their sentence. They're going to spend this time in the facility. There are people who have to oversee them. And how do you create a better environment? Because this is pre-trial. This is pre-conviction. And how do you create it so that the folks don't come out worse than they were then when they entered? When I found Sheriff Higgins, which now is 3 years ago, maybe even 4 years ago at this point, you know, we just spent time talking about what he was doing and sort of what we were thinking about in terms of what would we want to document and show to a viewer. Because I think in many ways, with these programs, you kind of want to create a Trojan horse. You want the viewer to come in because they're fascinated by the world. Mm. But then when they come in for the ride, they leave thinking about these larger issues and thinking about detention and incarceration in America and things like that. And so this is a world that we spend a lot of time in, and we're constantly thinking about ways to find new stories to tell that help broaden the conversation and broaden the aperture of what's going on in our country. Because, and I've said it to Sheriff Higgins multiple times, I believe that detention and incarceration are the story of America right now. We have a huge system dedicated to it. There are very few people who don't know somebody that's been detained, been incarcerated, works in the system, works in law enforcement. And so the more that we engage in this conversation, because this is our system, we fund these systems, then the more that we engage in this conversation, I think the better we are as a country. So that's a long answer as to how did I get into this. I found Sheriff Higgins, which was an incredible find, and he found me, which is great.
I have so many questions about this project and about why it's so important. And I'm so glad that you brought that up. And, you know, first, one of the things I was wondering is about your work, Greg, because as a documentarian, you know, to make a good story, you know, there has to be a story arc. There has to be conflict. And I know that the sheriff was hoping for ultimately some sort of harmony in the unit. So I'm wondering if you felt in some way like, you know, you want him to be successful, but at the same time, you need material for your documentary. So, you know, did you find yourself like low key, like slightly at cross purposes here? You know, like I'm looking for the moments that the sheriff doesn't want to have happen.
Yeah. He certainly knew that going into it. But I think at the end of the day, we both know the world pretty extensively. He far more extensively than I do. You know, those moments are going to happen. This is the world of jail, and things do happen in a detention setting. And so going in, I think more for me, the concern was, well, what are we going to learn? Is there actually going to be growth? Is it worth having done in the first place? Because while we all are obsessed with the sort of confined world and the ingenuity of how things get made or the breaking of rules and all this, at the end of the whole experiment, if you haven't actually learned something, then it was just a series of escalating incidents. And escalating incidents happen all the time in jail, but that's not the point and purpose for this. So in a weird way, I sort of had a strange confidence that I knew we would get the quote unquote jail of it all. But for me, the bigger question was, and then what? And that was actually the truly remarkable thing about watching this whole thing unfold in real time, was that there were and then what's and then and next.
Can you talk about the technical challenges of shooting inside a jail pod? Because it's not like other documentaries, right, where you can sit somebody in front of a, you know, and rent an Airbnb, say, to do like a really quiet, nice interview, or like put them in front of a really great green screen and do. I mean, what was the setup like? Like, how did you overcome those technical challenges?
You're in a secure setting, which there's, you know, at the very base, they don't like tools to come in and out of a facility because those can very easily be fashioned into weapons. And so there's a lot of orchestration about the way that our teams have to understand how to work. On a high level, we had almost 20 different cameras installed. We had about 19 different cameras installed. Many of them were like high-tech pan tilt zoom cameras so that you could be 30 yards away and still see what somebody was writing on a table. We had 70 microphones. And so we really came in, and they were actually already doing some work in the facility. And so we were able to come in and install all of this tech. And then we had a 24/7 control room outside that was watching all the time, listening all the time, and documenting all the time. And I think the biggest thing for us is that in more set up television, you have that convenience of calling cut, of going to your hotel for the day and shutting everything down or going to sleep. This is a working pod. These individuals are living there day in and day out. And so for us, it's about how can you almost step back and be much more observational than you are in other situations, but then always know what you're following. And so you have 60 potential stories happening at any time. And so it's a massive effort with, you know, I think we had probably 45 to 50 people on the ground running through 24/7, constantly touching base with each other. During the day, we would have two crews that would go into the unit. And so there's this kind of central tension between the purely observational fixed rig cameras, as we call them, and then the more documentary on the shoulder cameras.
So why do you think that they were so open with your team? I'm sorry, I found myself wondering that, because they could see the cameras, right? And they, the things that they were saying to the cameras really surprised me, with the openness, the clarity, and then also the very confessional nature of the stuff they were actually doing in the jail. Like, where did that openness come from?
It's a testament to our team, and the folks that were our shooters, our on the ground in the pod directors. They've worked in a lot of detention and correction settings. And so they coming in have a knowledge of the world so that when they're talking to the guys, they know that they're not just, you know, this isn't their first rodeo, essentially.
Violence is never the key. We don't ever want to hurt nobody, touch nobody. That's not really what this is about. But sometimes that's what somebody needs.
There's a conversation that kicks up that's off camera. And in a perfect world, and we told the sheriff this at the beginning, in a perfect world, what's ultimately going to happen is that our crew that interacts with his team every day, that interacts with the inmates every day, this just becomes the world. And so you strip away the fact that there's a call sheet and there's, you know, there's scenes work and everything. And instead, it's like it just becomes a flow. And so those conversations that you were seeing on camera were extensions of conversations that were going on off camera. Our folks got really invested in all of these detainees and their lives, but also the officers as well that we would meet on the outside that would facilitate our getting in and things like that. And so the honesty comes from the way that we take this on, which is we're really trying to document something. Mm. And so the more that we can take away the artifice, the more honest it becomes.
So, Sheriff, I'm a journalist. Like, I know how journalism works. And, you know, Greg's team is documenting this process. And I'm assuming there were ground rules with his team about violations that they saw and what they could tell you and what they wouldn't tell you. Could you talk about that? Because there was clearly a difference between things that they saw and things that you saw in real time.
Right. You know, of course, you know, we have our cameras and we're viewing things and we're doing our normal jail function, head counts, all those things. So we're operating, this facility is, this unit is operating like any other unit, and with the change of the deputy being on the outside and the change of cameras being in there. So we had long conversations about this, about the most important thing is the safety. Safety of the detainee, safety of the deputy, safety of the crew that may be in there. So that was paramount, that if something was happening that created an unsafe environment that we were not aware of and that they happened to know, that we would be informed about those things to ensure the safe operation. So to even get there, Greg and I spent a lot of time talking about this, and then way before any filming start of bringing my staff in and a few of his folks in to talk about what are the issues that could come up. You know, this is jail. You know certain things are going to happen in a jail setting, and so you have to anticipate those. And so I felt comfortable that if there was a risk, because I think looking at Greg's history of working in other facilities, our concerns are no different than the concerns in those other facilities. And so his team had that experience and understood that. So I felt comfortable that we can address those issues as they came along.
Sheriff, I'm not sure how much of the documentary you've seen at this point, but have you had a reaction to some stuff that you've seen maybe from Greg's point of view that you didn't see through the security cameras from your point of view?
Yeah. And I want to say, you know, right now we had a good conversation about this.
Yeah.
And one of the things I wanted to be able to do is view some of the footage as it was available, and was able to do that. And Greg told me from the very beginning, you're probably going to learn some things you're not going to like. And he was right. There's things that we saw because of the additional cameras that we didn't expect to see. And we learned from it. We learned how we do business, how we can improve the way we do business of securing a facility. So it was beneficial to see some of those things that he pointed out. And I wanted to tell him when he was telling me from the beginning that I doubt that. You know, we know what we're doing. We got the cameras, we got the crew. We're doing a good job doing the shakedowns, and we do
He's
everything.
Like, maybe hang the clock right. A little higher on the wall right, would be right. One tip.
And so he was absolutely right, and I do appreciate that. So it did benefit us to see things from a different angle that we maybe wouldn't have access to.
So, Greg, obviously, you know, for lack of a better word, casting is an important consideration when you're making a documentary. And there are a lot of men in this unit. How did you go about deciding, you know, who you would be following most for the 6 weeks of this filming project?
Sure. The challenge with these shows is that you can't really cast because you are documenting a world that already exists. And so once the sheriff had sort of designated the unit, we went in to meet everybody. And at the end of the day, the threshold is really consent, you know, like honest explanation of what's happening and getting consent for that. And then what is always the surprising thing, particularly for folks who haven't worked on shows like this before that are starting like a first time, somebody who's maybe working under one of my field producers, is that I think once you take away the expectation that you get to control and then see what you have, you realize that actually there's a lot of great story there. And I think so what is more happening is we know what the parameters are. We know there's going to be a day where the doors open. We know there was going to be a day when the doors end. You know, in the lead up, we were sort of the sheriff was offering up folks who we were trying to document an ordinary unit, like in terms of who was in there. And so sheriff's team had people that we would go out and meet that were in other units. And then there were folks that were already in the unit. And if folks that were in the unit said, you know, actually, I don't want to be on camera. I don't want to participate. Fine. There's plenty of other places that matched their custody level and other people would come in that were willing to participate. And so I think at the end of the day, the eye that we were constantly looking towards was, if I stepped out of this unit and walked into another unit, would I see the same range and roughly the same folks? Because at the end of the day, it's actually for us putting aside the mentality of casting and instead getting your mind much more into the documentary mindset, which is what's here, who's here, who are they, and how do they fit into this timeline that's unfolding in front of us?
So, Sheriff, I want to talk about the consideration you gave as to who would be a good fit for this program and who wouldn't, because Miller, for example, was a recent transfer who didn't work out. How did you give that consideration?
You know, what we wanted to do is have a unit that represented the facility, because, you know, I do have a reentry program. There's a way to get into the reentry program that everyone will qualify for. But if we're going to make a change in the facility, you know, my concern was, can we do something that we can replicate? You know, because if you're cherry picking the people that go into the unit, then you're going to get the results that you expect. But if you take a variety of people coming in, and our process was, you know, we have a process we go through classification to determine who can be in what type of unit, who can be with another person, or who do you have to keep separated, all those things. So we went through that process of ensuring that this facility represented a general population pot, that you had older people, you had younger people, you had people with various charges, you know, some serious charges, some lesser charges. You had different affiliations that were in that unit. Because my concern was not to do an experiment for the sake of an experiment. My concern was, is this something I can do that I can replicate into the next unit? Can we empower people and create a safer environment for the detainees and the deputies, but also help them to realize their potential and how they come into a community, and can they make that community safer by their actions? How does it impact everyone else? And I think in a jail setting where you have, you know, 40, you know, 50 something people coming into they didn't make arrangements to go to jail at the same time and be housed together like in college. They're here and they have different personalities, different stressors that they're dealing with. Can you take those individuals and create a better environment for them where they take the ownership in that facility and the peace in that facility and how their community operates? And I believe if you can do that in this unit, in a generic unit that represents this facility, then we can replicate it throughout the facility. And again, when 80% of these folks are coming home, then maybe what they learn is their personal actions can impact their community, whether it's in a jail or in the neighborhood. And that's what our goal was. So you want a unit that represents the jail and the jail population. And I think, you know, that was our goal.
Greg, it probably didn't take you long to figure out that Randy Randall, also known as True Story, took the community aspect of this pretty seriously, right?
Yeah.
Can you talk about, you know, the younger inmates, however, you know, called him extra, thought he was a lot. Can you talk about how central he was to this documentary and you know, basically the storyline that ended up playing out and what we ended up seeing?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Randy, we had met very early on when we were starting to understand who was in the unit. And we knew, that he was, you know, he was one of the OGs. And this was, you know, a world that he knew well. And I think that for me, the most interesting thing was you sort of see how all these folks fit together. And you think that Randy might take step forward. You already see that he's a worker, which is always a position that somebody who wants to like have a little more, for lack of a better term, power in that unit is going to take. So you kind of knew, okay, this is Randy. Obviously, Randy's also a good talker. You know, Randy definitely liked the camera.
I've been in jail like 9 times. I was locked up for 7 years in the penitentiary. I don't want to experiment no drugs no more. Ever in my life. Scared me, mama. But fuck that shit. Scared me, mama. You see it. But I don't want to experiment no drugs no more. Ever.
It's more when it starts to pay to happen. What you thought was going to happen happens. And I would say probably the most heartburn moment for the sheriff and for me for different reasons, but then the most remarkable was that first 12 hours. So doors unlock. Everybody does what you would expect them to do, which is yell the lieutenant out of the unit, jump around, act crazy. And then I think after about 10 minutes, they realized that nobody was really like that nothing was happening. That was like, great, you can keep running around. By that evening, it was Randall who gathered some of the other folks and did a town hall.
I don't want to see that shit no more. Y'all don't want to go back behind that 23 and 1 shit. There was a lot of folks doing that shit last night. A lot of bullshit. A lot of folks in here talking about they don't care about that. All you motherfuckers care. That's all the freedom that we got. We all are here responsible for shit. No more game, man.
But then right away, you started to see the younger kids who, in a complicated way, feel like they don't get power and respect from these guys, but also they kind of don't want to take it quite yet, start to emerge. And so we knew that Randy was going to be a central figure. I think the thing was, it's always then when it becomes real, how is that going to play out? And at that point, you're just documenting it forward. Because I think the other thing is Randy actually takes himself out of the equation and comes back in. And those are things you can never predict how that all rides. I mean, for me, Tiny is, you know, one of the most remarkable characters going through this story, because he is the guy that you would write off, but he's a thoughtful young man. It is watching how the different personalities play off of each other. But again, you're playing catch up and you're trying to just see this all unfold.
So, Sheriff, looking back, how important is an inmate like Randy Randall to the success of your program?
He's very important, you know, but then there's always a challenge when you, who wants to be the pod boss and what's their intent behind? Is it control, to control everyone, or is it to improve the environment? And I think his ultimate goal was to improve the environment and keep the benefits that he was experiencing, because he knows what jail is like. He knows what it can be. So it's, you know, that was one of our concerns, is who would step up? Who would be the person that would try to take control, and what would be their motives behind it? And so I think it was key that he did step up. And I think he had some good intentions in the environment, and he had an impact on the other folks in the unit.
So, Greg, earlier you mentioned Tiny. You know, he was struggling without a connection to the outside world and the son he hadn't seen. And when he was able to make those free phone calls, he still had trouble connecting with his son. And over the course of the series, we do finally see him make that connection. Yeah. Can you talk about what it was like to see him change after he made that connection?
Yeah, we all get very involved. We're very present. We're very involved. And it was devastating for most of us where there were those missed connections, because most of the time, you know, the missed phone call, you don't then get to see the aftermath where it's walking back into the unit, walking back into the cell, just trying to come to terms with another missed connection, but then also trying to have somebody who's trying not to show that this is painful.
But I know he's busy. I know he's busy through these little times, you know what I'm saying? Little schedule stuff, because like I say, he's playing sports. He's studying a lot.
I think there were a lot of tears once there was that family connect in the visitation, and there was a lot of excitement in the lead up to it. And so our crew is getting just as involved with the day for day. And there's so much conversation, you know, that night when shifts change, it's like, did he get the call today? What happened today? And then you follow that into the evening. And so, you know, we were kind of along for the ride that I think the audience is going to see as well. And we were just doing it in real time.
You know, one person who really takes to your program is Crooks. He's in the process of getting clean from drugs, and he's very open about his struggles. And he talks about how he knows how to do the right thing, but can't, which I found to be an incredibly moving confessional.
I'm going to get out of here next week. But like, it breaks me down because to even admit that I can't take care of myself, because it bothers me. I want to be able to take care of other people. I want to be like needed.
I'm going to stay on a straight path. It's by helping folks, it's made me feel good, just like I thought drugs did.
Can you talk about what your program provided for him?
I think what it provided for him is support, being in an environment where you can acknowledge those things and acknowledge that you need help. that you can't do it alone, and given the opportunity to provide some wraparound services for him, the opportunity to go to somewhere, go to another unit, or go where you can get the help that you need. I'll tell you, even in our reentry program, what makes it work is the environment, the other detainees that are struggling with some of the same things, and they're being honest about that, and giving information about where you can get help, and then staff providing also information and the support so that you can get the help you need to not only while you're in the facility, but more importantly, when you walk out, the resources that are available to you.
I also think in watching him, we saw a voice that we thought we might find, which is, this is BS. You know, we're being messed with. This is not for real. And then I think once you get to realize this is change, and once he realizes this is change, he also starts to think about himself, you know, and that's like creating that white space to think differently about the situation he was in, I think created that space for him to actually really have some pretty amazing realizations.
Well, speaking of the voice, you know, among the others you follow, Greg, is John McAllister, a.k.a. Eastside.
Yeah.
He had this very funny story initially about this botched attempt to burgle a pet store. Any chance you heard from him first and said, this is the guy who's going to mess this whole experiment up?
Yeah. First, it was the best story I've ever heard about how somebody got clinked up.
So I'm like coming out the hole and I see the fucking cop. I'm like, oh, shit. And I fucking turn around so fast, I must have scared the iguana, because this motherfucker bites my fucking dick. I got this fucking big ass snake and there's a fence, a big ass fence. I'm starting to climb the fucking fence. And this fucking snake starts tightening up on me. And I'm like, fall off the fence. I couldn't even breathe. And I'm like, ugh.
McAllister was, Eastside was a wild card for us because he was young and we weren't sure how he was going to take to it. And yeah, I fully expected that he was going to mess it up, do something that would like really cause a problem that would get kicked out. And then again, the most remarkable thing happens, which is he starts to think about the way he's doing his time and the way he's doing things. So over the series, you get to see this kid who starts out being everything you expected, the tattoo man and the acid dropping, you know, drug addict who steals snakes. But then you realize actually he's still just a kid and he's still dealing with some things. And he comes to some places that were really kind of remarkable for us to watch him go to.
So, Sheriff, we do see Eastside making tattoos, making hooch, masterminding this caper to make a wick. And a lot of people, to be clear, were responsible for this shakedown we see in the program. But Eastside ultimately stood up and takes responsibility. It did seem to me like the experiment needed to fail in some ways in order to prove it could work. What do you think?
You know, I think the experiment had to show people doing what you expect them to do in jail. And you're looking for that light bulb to come on. You know, I think one of the things that happened through the experiment is you create the value for the individuals that they realize that they have value and they have a say in their environment. And you want those things to happen. You know, when you look at him initially, part of you want to say, let's get him out of there. But that's the nature of jail. And the hope is that you see some revelations on their part, that things can be different. I don't have to always do the same thing I've been doing. And the expectation for what happens in the jail setting, what are you supposed to do when you go to jail? There's an idea out there about how the behavior in a jail, and the people who come in here, a lot of them know that and they follow in line with that. And I think what we show here is that you can change the narrative. You can change the expectation for behavior in the unit. And I think you saw some of that even with as transitions, other people coming into the unit, they conform to the environment. And that's what we're looking for.
Sheriff, I'm just going to say you changed the expectation, I think, for the viewer, for the behavior in a jail by letting the experiment go on even after it failed. So I just want to commend you for that because you are a huge part, I think, of why it was successful. I'm just going to tell you that, interrupt the interview to say that. And I'm going to ask you, Greg, do you think that ultimately this experiment is successful? I mean, what's your take?
I think that it played out in all of the twists and turns and dramatic way that we had hoped from the beginning, which was going into it, I don't think I ever told the sheriff this, but I pretty much expected that we'd go a couple of days and then we'd be done. my hope was that what would play out was what played out, which is when you give people agency in a world without agency and responsibility in equal measures, they will actually take that seriously over time and still make mistakes and still make turns. As far as successful, you know, I tell this to every sheriff department I get to work with, which is I'm not the arbiter of success. I have a job that I want to do. I have something I want to document. I have something I want to put out. So the question for me is, how's the audience going to take it? How are the folks of Little Rock going to take it? How's the sheriff's department going to take it? How's the sheriff's office going to take it? How are the inmates who participated in it going to take it? And so success for me is measured not just out of great, we're done and it's about to come out. It's also what's the first week like? What are the 6 months like? What conversations get generated? And so I'm happy with what we've done to date. And I'm really proud of what we've done to date. I think it's pretty remarkable. And we'll see where it goes.
Sheriff, there are a lot of people who say that jail isn't supposed to be comfortable. It's supposed to be purely punitive. And I'm sure you'll hear from people who are saying you're taking your jail in the wrong direction. What do you say to those people?
I say, look at what you're producing. Look at the results of jails in America. How many people do we have in prison? How many states, Arkansas, they want to build more prisons to house more people. So I believe what we're doing doesn't work. And I think we have to do things differently. You have to realize the value of an individual, recognize people will make mistakes. People will just outright do things that are wrong, and they have to be held accountable for that. But I think we can change their future by investing in them and helping them see their value. I think that's the key thing in this. When you look at a jail setting, can we change someone's directive, the projection of where they're going? Can we change how they feel about themselves and what they think they can accomplish? And I think that's the most important thing. We're supposed to hold people accountable, but it's also about rehabilitation. It is not, jail is not supposed to be, we want you to come in here, we're going to be managing, we're going to punish you. And so when you get out, you'll do the same thing and just try not to get caught. The idea is that you take accountability for your actions and you change your behavior and you step out wanting to be a positive member of the community, acknowledging your past, acknowledging the mistakes you've made and learn from that and become a productive member of our community. That's what jails and prisons are supposed to be about, not just trying to get punished people and what happens, happens. We'll just catch you again. And I think that's what we're dealing with in jails today, is that majority of them, we'll just catch you again. I don't want you coming out and breaking in my house. I want you coming out and getting a job and being a productive member of our community and paying your taxes and taking care of your financial responsibilities. And I think we can teach that. And not everybody's going to succeed. Not everybody's going to be successful the first time around. Somebody may have to visit us a couple times, but I think we can do things better.
Well, let's hope folks take your example and learn from you, Sheriff. The series is Unlocked, a Jail Experiment. Executive producer Greg Henry and Pulaski County Sheriff Eric Higgins, thank you so much for joining me on You Can't Make This Up to talk about it.
Thank you.
That's it for this week's episode. Thanks again to executive producer Greg Henry and Sheriff Eric Higgins. For more of my takes, check out my other podcast, Crime Writers On. Each week on that show, we break down the latest in true crime documentaries, TV shows, podcasts, and pop culture. If you like You Can't Make This Up, please rate and review this show and share it with your friends. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. And make sure to follow the show to stay tuned for all new episodes. You Can't Make This Up is a production of Netflix. I'm Rebecca Lavoie. Thanks so much for listening.